Proverbs 30. So this is our final lesson in this study of Proverbs that we have been doing for a few months now, just looking at wisdom in Proverbs and throughout different topics in the book of Proverbs. And we've been ending this study by looking at more of the theology of Proverbs and also how that Proverbs fits with some of the other books of Scripture and such. So, and that's really where we are tonight. This is lesson number 22, and the title is Jesus Christ, the Wisdom of God. So we're going to start here, Proverbs 30, verse number 4. Who hath ascended up into heaven or descended? Who hath gathered the wind in his fists? Who hath bound the waters in a garment? Who hath established all the ends of the earth? What is his name? And what is his son's name, if thou canst tell? So the question that we come to at the end of our study, do we find Jesus Christ and the gospel in the book of Proverbs? Now this saying of Augur here, obviously referring to the Creator, and his son in verse number 4. It's a saying that's been puzzling to many for a long time. But we do find the son in Proverbs, and we do find his gospel. We do find good news. So, but to start, we have to see Jesus as the wisdom of God, and then see his salvation pitted against the foolishness of destruction. And then it seems very reasonable and logical that we would find Jesus Christ and the gospel in a book like Proverbs. So 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verses 18 to 24. So here's what Paul wrote to the church at Corinth. For the preaching of the cross is to them that perish foolishness. So pay attention to words of wisdom and folly that are throughout this passage. But unto us which are saved, it is the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and will bring to nothing the understanding of the prudent. Where is the wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the disputer of this world? Hath not God made foolish the wisdom of this world? For after that, in the wisdom of God, the world by wisdom knew not God. It pleased God by the foolishness of preaching to save them that believe. For the Jews require a sign, and the Greeks seek after wisdom. But we preach Christ crucified, unto the Jews a stumbling block, and unto the Greeks foolishness. But unto them which are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God. Now, Paul obviously is using the language and the figures of wisdom as he's writing to the Corinthians about Jesus Christ and about his gospel, about his crucifixion and salvation, how that the wisdom of the world, that is a wisdom that is not from above, but it's a wisdom that's earthly. And the wisdom of the world may have a certain amount of practical application to it and such, and we think about things we've talked about, like, you know, we might talk about common sense and things like that. And so there is certainly a common sense that people can have who may not be believers. You know, they may not believe in Jesus Christ, but yet they can have some common sense. They can have some practical wisdom. They might be good with saving and spending money. They might be good at controlling their tempers. They might be, you know, they may have some practical wisdom in that way. But Paul shows how, through the sacrifice of Jesus Christ, that God has made the wisdom of the world to be foolishness. Why? Because there's no salvation in that. Simply managing your business affairs well, controlling your tongue, controlling your anger, having good relationships with your spouse or with your family or coworkers or neighbors or whatever the case may be, as good as those things may be in and of themselves, there's no salvation in them. So God has made the wisdom of the world to be foolishness by sending his son, Jesus Christ, to die on a cross. And verses 23 and 24, there Paul tells us that to the unbelieving, Jesus is an offense and folly. And he used the word stumbling block and an offense. He's something that the Jews trip over. And he's foolishness to the Greeks. So Jesus is an offense and folly. But to the believing, he's the power and wisdom of God. Jesus said that the Old Testament testifies of him. And the book of Proverbs is no exception. So in this last lesson of this study, we want to consider how that Proverbs shows us Jesus Christ and the gospel. Well, to start with that, we want to go to Proverbs chapter number 8. Obviously, when we have statements like Paul made there in 1 Corinthians, as well as in some other places in the New Testament, that Jesus is the wisdom of God, that he's filled with all the fullness of the wisdom of God. And in Proverbs, we do have some instances where wisdom is personified and speaks in a way that ascribes attributes that really are only had by Jesus Christ. So what we see here in Proverbs chapter number 8 really can only be truly ascribed to Jesus Christ. And we can compare. I'm going to read through this section, and then we'll just mention a couple of places in the New Testament where we see these comparable statements made about Jesus Christ. So Proverbs chapter 8, and we'll do verse 12 through verse 36. So that's through the end of the chapter. I, wisdom, dwell with prudence and find out knowledge of witty inventions. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil. Pride and arrogancy and the evil way and the froward mouth do I hate. Now again, you notice that wisdom is personified here. Wisdom is speaking here in Proverbs 8 as a person, saying, I hate. Notice as it goes on, counsel is mine and sound wisdom. I am understanding. I have strength. By me kings reign and princes decree justice. By me princes rule and nobles, even all the judges of the earth. I love them that love me, and those that seek me early shall find me. Riches and honor are with me, yea, durable riches and righteousness. My fruit is better than gold, yea, than fine gold, and my revenue than choice silver. I lead in the way of righteousness in the midst of the paths of judgment, that I may cause those that love me to inherit substance, and I will fill their treasures. The Lord possessed me in the beginning of his way, before his works of old. I was set up from everlasting, from the beginning, or ever the earth was. When there were no depths, I was brought forth, when there were no fountains abounding with water. Before the mountains were settled, before the hills was I brought forth, while as yet he had not made the earth, nor the fields, nor the highest parts of the dust of the world. When he prepared the heavens, I was there. When he set a compass upon the face of the depth, when he established the clouds above, when he strengthened the fountains of the deep, when he gave to the sea his decree that the waters should not pass his commandment, when he appointed the foundations of the earth, then I was by him as one brought up with him, and I was daily his delight, rejoicing always before him, rejoicing in the habitable part of his earth, and my delights were with the sons of men. Now therefore hearken unto me, O ye children, for blessed are they that keep my ways, hear instruction and be wise and refuse it not. Blessed is the man that heareth me, watching daily at my gates, watching at the posts of my doors. For whoso findeth me findeth life, and shall obtain favor of the Lord. But he that sinneth against me wrongeth his own soul. All they that hate me love death. So obviously, we see wisdom speaking. We see many attributes alluded to, again, that are things that are really only true and only had of Jesus Christ himself as the wisdom of God, in inhabiting human flesh in the world. So think about statements like John chapter 1, verses 1 to 3. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. So Proverbs 8:30 says, then I was by him as one brought up with him. And as I understand in the Hebrew, that's actually kind of a difficult phrase there, but the words underlying that passage actually point to something like a workman what is the word? Artifice an artisan. He's a maker. Wisdom is speaking about being with God and making in the creation. All things were made by him, John said, and without him was not anything made that was made. Talking about the word, the logos, who is also called the wisdom of God, Jesus Christ. Colossians 1:17, and he is before all things, and by him all things consist. And we see that also there in Proverbs 8, before the earth was brought forth, or the seas and the hills and all those things. John chapter 8, verse 24, Jesus said, I said therefore unto you that ye shall die in your sins. For if ye believe not that I am he, ye shall die in your sins. And of course, wisdom at the end of Proverbs 8 says, for whoso findeth me findeth life and shall obtain favor of the Lord. But he that sinneth against me wrongeth his own soul. All they that hate me love death. So a passage like Proverbs 8 is pretty apparent. It's pretty explicit. I mean, even in Old Testament references about the Messiah, we can find how that he will be filled with the wisdom of God from places like Isaiah chapter number 11, speaking of that branch of David, the one that would come. So when we understand that Jesus is the wisdom of God, it isn't difficult to read the book of Proverbs and to see Jesus in the various descriptions and applications and sayings of wisdom. And so to see the gospel and Proverbs contributing to that gospel-centric storyline of Scripture, we of course have to read the deep wisdom of Proverbs, and we do so sort of along with other Scripture. So that brings us now to the wisdom of the gospel, the wisdom of the gospel. So we've already considered what Proverbs reveals about God and mankind. We did that a few lessons ago. So what does Proverbs tell us about God? What is God like? What do we learn about God in the book of Proverbs? What does Proverbs tell us about mankind? What are we like? What are our problems? What is the dilemma that we are in? And so we can see in the book of Proverbs, we can see Jesus in places like Proverbs 8, where we just read. So we can see Jesus in the book of Proverbs, and then we can also see us in the book of Proverbs, in various ways, and particularly in the portrayal of the wise and the foolish sons. So when we think about the pictures that are given to us, and one of the things that we talked about in Proverbs early on is how that Proverbs a lot will give us character sketches, like the character sketch of the lazy man who's like a door on its hinges, like he's hinged to his bed. He never gets up and goes anywhere and goes to work, but he's just turning back and forth on his bed. And so we get these kind of character sketches. You know, here's a picture of wisdom in the life of this person. Here's a picture of folly in the life of this person. And so we have, throughout Proverbs, we have these little sketches and little cameos of wise sons and of foolish sons. So what do we see about wise and foolish sons? What are their characteristics in Proverbs? Well, a wise son is one that listens to his father's instructions and keeps it. He keeps the instructions of his father. So we can think about places like Proverbs 1:8, chapter 2, verse 1, 3:1, 4:10, 5:1, and we could go on with several others, even as late as Proverbs 28, verse 7. So we see that throughout the Proverbs, a wise son is one that listens to his father. He keeps that word. He keeps that law of his father. On the other hand, a foolish son is one that despises his mother, like Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 20. One that is a grievous burden, because obviously he doesn't listen and obey, chapter Proverbs 10, verse 1. A wise son is also presented to us as one who receives correction, Proverbs 3 and verse number 11. So a foolish son then is obviously going to be the opposite of that, and scorns correction, Proverbs 13, 1. A wise son is one who's going in the way of wisdom, makes his father glad. In other words, he pleases his father. Proverbs 10, 1, 15, verse 20, 23, verse 15, 27, verse 11. And a foolish son, obviously, is going to be the opposite of that, one that causes shame to his father and mother, Proverbs 17, 2. One that grieves his father and embitters his mother, Proverbs 17, 25. One that is a calamity or a catastrophe to his father, Proverbs 19, verse 13. And one that is a great waster of his father's resources, Proverbs 19, verse 26. A wise son is also one that does not go with sinners. Wise son is not one that becomes the companion of fools, as it were, Proverbs 1, verse 10 and 15. However, on the other hand, a foolish son is one in Proverbs who is a companion of rioters, Proverbs 28, verse number 7. A wise son is a hard and diligent worker that gathers in the summer, in Proverbs 10, verse 5. A foolish son, by contrast, is one that sleeps during the harvest, in Proverbs 10, verse 5. As a result, a wise son, in Proverbs, is one that will be ornamented with grace, in Proverbs 1, 9. One who will find the knowledge of God, in Proverbs 2, 5. One who will be guided and kept by wisdom, Proverbs 2, 9 to 11. He will find life and peace, Proverbs 3, 2, and be blessed of the Lord, Proverbs 3, verses 33 to 35. However, the contrast is the foolish son will get a rod of punishment, Proverbs 22, 15. Proverbs 23, verses 13 and 14. Proverbs 29, 15. And is one who will be cursed of the Lord, Proverbs 3, verses 33 to 35. So we read in Proverbs 22, 15, foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. Proverbs 23, verses 13 to 14, withhold not correction from the child, for if thou beatest him with the rod, he shall not die. Thou shalt beat him with the rod and shalt deliver his soul from hell. Proverbs 29, 15, the rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. In other words, there's a connection between the rod and foolishness. The rod, the foolish folly deserves the rod, so to speak. So these are just a quick rundown of the sketches that we see of wise and foolish sons, or daughters for that matter, in the book of Proverbs. So now we obviously can read this, obviously seeing Jesus and us in these pictures of Proverbs. Well, if we're thinking about wise and foolish sons, well, which one is Jesus? Good, you had me worried there for a minute. Yeah, that's not hard. Jesus is the wise son, obviously. I mean, Jesus is the one who obeys his father. So think about things like John chapter 5, verse 30, John chapter 6, verse 38, John chapter 17 and verse 4. We think about the voice of the Father from heaven, just declaring that this is my beloved Son in whom I'm well pleased, like Mark chapter 1 and verse 11 and Mark chapter 9 and verse 7. So it's obvious that Jesus is the wise Son. All of those great attributes that we see of the wise Son in the book of Proverbs is true of Jesus Christ. Well, then what does that make us? Okay. I thought maybe we'd go for slightly less wise sons, but you're going to say foolish sons. Yeah. No, that's right. No. So we are the foolish sons. So what we're talking about is in terms of our obedience to God, our obedience to God as a creator, our obedience to God as a father, our obedience to God and to his word. Well, Bible tells us that there's none righteous, no, not one. That we have all sinned, we've all gone astray, we have all missed the mark, which is the meaning of the word, that we've come short of God's glory. We've sinned and we've come short. There's not a person on the earth who has met up to God's standard, who has obeyed Him as a creator and a father and as a God and has obeyed Him 100% faithfully. No, we're all foolish children. And what that means is that we are deserving of the rod. We are foolish children who deserve a beating. Deuteronomy chapter 25, verses 2 and 3 gives us the law, and it shall be, if the wicked man be worthy to be beaten, that the judge shall cause him to lie down and to be beaten before his face according to his fault by a certain number. 40 stripes he may give him and not exceed, lest if he should exceed and beat him above these with many stripes, then thy brother should seem vile unto thee. So here in the Old Covenant law, there were various penalties for various types of transgressions. And one of those penalties was a beating. It was a scourging. And of course, we have here the famous law that commanded 40 stripes, but no more. And so we know that in, for instance, in the days of Jesus and of his apostles, the Pharisees had interpreted that as being the 39 stripes. It would be 40 stripes save one. So they didn't want to exceed. They didn't want to go beyond. So they would stop it at 39 in a most gracious manner. And we know that Paul himself actually received that sort of scourging. And a lot of times when we think about these penalties, think and particularly as it relates to children specifically, Deuteronomy chapter 21, verses 18 to 21, in the case of persistent and willful rebellion, it's not the rod, but it's death. If a man have a stubborn and rebellious son, which will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and that when they have chastened him will not hearken unto them, then shall his father and his mother lay hold on him and bring him out unto the elders of his city and unto the gate of his place, and they shall say unto the elders of this city, this our son is stubborn and rebellious, he will not obey our voice, he's a glutton and a drunkard, and all the men of this city shall stone him with stones that he die. So shalt thou put evil away from among you, and all Israel shall hear and fear. So when we understand the situation, and we've talked about this already, that foolishness in Proverbs is not just a matter of ignorance. It's not just a matter of simplicity or naivety. It's not just a small thing. Foolishness is wickedness in the book of Proverbs. Foolishness is deserving of a rod and ultimately death, just as is specified. So when you read about these foolish sons in Proverbs, like if they're not corrected, then ultimately they go for the beating, they go for death. So think about how that Proverbs teaches us that the rod belongs to the fool. So Proverbs 10, verse 13, in the lips of him that hath understanding, wisdom is found, but a rod is for the back of him that is void of understanding. Proverbs 17, 10, a reproof entereth into a wise man more than 100 stripes into a fool. Proverbs 18, 6, a fool's lips enter into contention, and his mouth calleth for strokes. Proverbs 19, 25, smite a scorner, and the simple will beware, and reprove one that hath understanding, and he will understand knowledge. Proverbs 19, 29, judgments are prepared for scorners, and stripes for the back of fools. Proverbs 26, 3, a whip for the horse, a bridle for the ass, and a rod for the fool's back. Proverbs 27, 22, though thou shouldest bray a fool in a mortar among wheat with a pestle, yet will not his foolishness depart from him. So folly earns a rod. Folly earns a beating. It earns a scourging. Now, so when we read that, the point is not for us to think, oh, okay, well then we just need to start you know, beating all the fools around us or something like that. No, that's not the point. We are the fools, and this is what we have merited. This is what we have deserved before God. We're foolish children, and this is what we've deserved. We've deserved this rod and ultimately death because we're not cured of our folly in and of ourselves. So then when we think again about Jesus as the wise son, we realize then what the gospel means as related to Proverbs and the fate of wise and foolish sons. Because though Jesus was the wise son, Jesus actually suffered as a foolish son in order that foolish sons might be delivered from the wrath due to a fool and be rewarded with life and peace and blessing that is due to a wise son. You see, again, that's the point. Not that, oh, well, you know, we need to start beating fools, or, you know, we need to be like Pharisees and you know, we'll give 40 stripes, save one. So we'll do 39 to make sure that we're not being excessive. No, the point is that that's what we all deserve. But Jesus, though he was the wise son, took the place of the foolish son. And he took the beating that was due to the foolish son. And a lot of times when we think about the death of Jesus Christ, and I realize that, you know, ultimately he's nailed to the cross, and that's where his life is ended. It's given up there on the cross. But don't overlook the fact that he was subjected to the scourging that a fool deserves before he got to that cross. In other words, what I'm saying is that Jesus has fulfilled this. He has fulfilled the law, even receiving the punishment that the law says is deserved or is owed to those transgressors. So we think about a passage like Isaiah chapter 53 then. Who hath believed our report? And to whom is the arm of the Lord revealed? For he shall grow up before him as a tender plant and as a root out of a dry ground. He hath no form nor comeliness, and when we shall see him, there's no beauty that we should desire him. He is despised and rejected of men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief, and we hid as it were our faces from him, for he was despised and we esteemed him not. Surely he hath borne our griefs and carried our sorrows, yet we did esteem him stricken, smitten of God, and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement of our peace was upon him, and with his stripes we are healed. All we like sheep have gone astray. We've turned everyone to his own way, and the Lord hath laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed, and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. He is brought as a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before her shearers is dumb, so he openeth not his mouth. He was taken from prison and from judgment, and who shall declare his generation? For he was cut off out of the land of the living. For the transgression of my people was he stricken. And he made his grave with the wicked, and with the rich in his death, because he had done no violence, neither was any deceit in his mouth. Yet it pleased the Lord to bruise him. And he hath put him to grief. When thou shalt make his soul an offering for sin, he shall see his seed, he shall prolong his days, and the pleasure of the Lord shall prosper in his hand. He shall see of the travail of his soul and shall be satisfied, and by his knowledge shall my righteous servant justify many, for he shall bear their iniquities. Therefore will I divide him a portion with the great, and he shall divide the spoil with the strong, because he hath poured out his soul unto death. He was numbered with the transgressors, and he bare the sin of many and made intercession for the transgressors. So Jesus became the foolish son in our place, that we might in turn be treated as wise sons. So ultimately, what we see here is that Jesus became our proverb that we might be saved. Now, what I mean by that is that the foolish son is a proverb. And when we think about proverbs, we think about a saying. But the foolish son is actually a proverb, much like we talked about the slothful or the simple young man in Proverbs chapter 7. He is a proverb. He is a negative example. The foolish son embodies folly and lives it out to its conclusion before us so that we might not follow his path to destruction. Sometimes we might think about that as like an object lesson, or maybe if we think about some of the morality tales where we have maybe a description of someone that did something very foolish or very bad. And so from our vantage point, we watch that and we condemn that person, and we're not them, we're not going to be them. So how did Jesus become our proverb? Well, Moses warned Israel, the second generation was about to enter into the land, and he warned them about the curses that would come on them for disobedience and breaking God's covenant. So in Deuteronomy chapter 28 and verse 37, he said, "And thou shalt become an astonishment, a proverb, and a byword among all nations whither the Lord shall lead thee." Astonishment, proverb, and byword. And those three are not exactly synonyms, but they are very closely related. So this is a very repetitive statement. Typically in the Hebrew, that type of repetition leads to an emphasis. An astonishment, a horror, a proverb, and a byword. In other words, a laughingstock. You break God's covenant, you transgress his word, and you will become cursed. You will become a laughingstock upon the earth. You will become a reproach. You will become a mockery upon the earth, a proverb. This warning was renewed to Solomon, 1 Kings chapter 9, verses 6 and 7. "But if ye shall at all turn from following me, ye or your children, and will not keep my commandments and my statutes which I have set before you, but go and serve other gods and worship them, then will I cut off Israel out of the land which I have given them, and this house which I have hallowed for my name will I cast out of my sight, and Israel shall be a proverb and a byword among all people." Of course, this was prophesied by Jeremiah chapter 24 and verse 9. "And I will deliver them," this is the evil figs in this imagery in Jeremiah 24, "I will deliver them to be removed into all the kingdoms of the earth for their hurt, to be a reproach and a proverb, a taunt and a curse in all places whither I shall drive them." So being made a proverb means being cursed of God. It means being made a reproach and a laughingstock on the earth. What? This is the great people of God. This is the great chosen nation. These are the ones that made their boast in the Lord. And this has happened to Israel. But it also happens to all of those who are in sin. Remember that Jesus is foolishness to the Greeks. In Acts chapter number 17, they scorned and mocked at the preaching of Jesus and the resurrection. So, we look at a messianic psalm in Psalm 69, and we see this great messianic psalm, how that it prophesies the Messiah to become a proverb in order to deliver his people from wrath. Psalm 69, verse 11, "I made sackcloth also my garment, and I became a proverb to them. So just to quickly run down this psalm, which is one that we have previously studied, how that this psalm is fulfilled in Jesus. Verse 4 is a righteous sufferer. Verse 5 is a sin bearer. Verse 8 of this psalm, he is rejected by his own. Verses 7 and 9, he receives the reproaches in himself that are aimed at God. In verse 17, though, he is God's servant. In verses 19 and 20, he suffers public scorn and mockery. In verse 26, he is smitten by God. In verse 29, he's poor and sorrowful. In verses 32 and 33, his deliverance means deliverance for lowly prisoners. Verse 34, his deliverance leads to the universal praise of God. And Zion and the inheritance of Israel is promised to Abraham and are at stake in his deliverance by the end of the psalm in verses 35 to 36. So in other words, here's the prophecy. The Messiah will become a proverb. What does that mean? It means that he will be mocked and scorned and beaten publicly as a fool and the worst sort of sinner or criminal. So Jesus becoming the foolish son then becomes our proverb. You see, that's that destruction. If you think about what Paul wrote in Romans chapter 9 about how that God's willing to show his wrath. He's willing to show his wrath in those vessels of destruction. They will be proverbs for eternity. They will stand as symbols of God's judgment. Well, Jesus became our proverb, so that through the beating that was conferred on him, we might be saved. And not only saved from wrath, not only saved from being a proverb, but also to being rewarded as wise sons in whom the Father is pleased, though we ourselves have never pleased the Father. Well, this is the hope of the gospel in the book of Proverbs. All right, any questions about any of our study here tonight? That is exactly the point. So, like when you think about Deuteronomy, for instance, you know, Deuteronomy is the rehearsing of the law, so the rehearsing of the covenant to this second generation of Israel. And as you read Deuteronomy, you know, this prediction, like in Deuteronomy 28, we were in Deuteronomy 28, that's a prophecy of what's going to happen. They're not going to keep this covenant. These curses are going to come upon them, and then there's a prophecy that God's going to turn and have mercy on them. So Moses points out in the book of Deuteronomy that the problem is one that's internal. The problem is not with the covenant. That's not the problem. The problem is with their heart, and that they need their heart circumcised, and the language he uses in Deuteronomy. So when you look at Proverbs, that's exactly what you see echoed. That one verse about, you know, you could beat a fool like with a what's that called, a mortar and a pestle, and you know, but yet they'll not be cured of their folly. And you know, 100 stripes you know, to a fool is not going to recover him. So yeah, that is the point of that. Yeah, does that make sense? Anything else? Sure.
Have you ever looked into how Jews interpret Isaiah 53? Like, do they consider that to be messianic?
No. Well, they generally reject any idea of a vicarious or substitutionary atonement, and they will cite verses like, you know, a verse that would say something along the line of, you know, that basically a man has to answer for his own sins and not those of another, and that sort of thing. So they don't interpret it messianic that way. Anything else? I think they generally, if I'm not mistaken, I read several years ago an article from one of the rabbis on that. And I think they generally like apply it to the prophet. Like, this is what Isaiah suffered, you know, trying to bring this prophecy to Israel, and just kind of explain it away that way.